If it's 7 p.m., go to vbbarts.org for directions and more information. And bring a few pounds of dried beans or lentils in solidarity with Houston's Food Not Bombs. This event is co-sponsored by KPFT Houston.
Thanks, as always, for kicking off your weekend with us here at the Houston Indie Media Show. As a reminder, Pledge Drive is coming up soon, but you don't have to wait for us to beg on the airwaves. If you like what you hear, you can always go to KPFT's website, click on the tip jar, and put your money where your ears are. Tonight, we will be taking you on a tour of the 1%, celebrate Occupy Houston's birthday, and hear how Hollywood is joining in the vilification of teachers and the unions that advocate for them. But first, these headlines. Members of the tar sands blockade in East Texas say off-duty cops hired by TransCanada are creating a police state around the site, arresting journalists, blocking supplies, and harassing residents on their own land. The organization, made up of East Texas residents and climate activists, is now in its third week of a standoff with the Alberta-based corporation. Reports surfaced yesterday that a New York Times reporter and photographer were detained and threatened with arrest for trespassing. Reporter Dan Frosch and photographer Brandon Thibodeau were covering the pipeline protest from private property with the landowner's permission. In a statement released by the tar sands blockade in response to these latest events, quote, "These events mark the latest in a series in which journalists and the constitutional ideal of a free press suffer the same disrespect and abuse that TransCanada has shown to families along the Keystone XL pipeline route for years. Reports have included open threats of arrest on private property, the confiscation of cameras and video equipment, and arrests of bystanders on public rights of way. All the while, questions linger regarding the legality of policing the Keystone XL pipeline easement in this way," end quote. A direct action training camp organized by Tar Sands Blockade will be held this upcoming weekend, October 12th through the 14th. This event will culminate in a large public gathering on the 15th. For more information, listeners can go to the group's Facebook page. And in What the Frack news, on Tuesday, after a month-long search by the National Guard, local police, and health officials, an oil field worker found a radioactive rod Halliburton lost on a 130-mile trip between fracking sites in the Texas desert. The worker found the 7-inch rod, which contained a Category 3 source of radiation with potential to be used to make a dirty bomb, lying along a highway near Pecos. The FBI determined that there was no criminal activity involved with the loss. The United States terrorism level remains on orange in spite of the breach, where it has held strong since 2002. And finally, in news out of South Africa, worker strikes continue at the Anglo-American Platinum plant in Rustenburg, west of Pretoria. Two people have reportedly died, one from injuries sustained from rubber bullets assumed to have been shot by police while trying to disperse the crowd of protesters. Another man was set on fire by miners and died of his wounds. No reason for that attack has been reported. Late last week, Anglo-American fired 12,000 striking workers. In turn, the workers have vowed not to allow the company to hire any new miners. Police have banned public gatherings.
The Occupy Houston 1 year anniversary was last Sunday, October 6th. As Occupy movements across the country have celebrated their birthdays in recent weeks, Occupy Houston included a tour of the 1%. Multinational corporations and big banks were on display last Saturday, including TransCanada, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, just to name a few. At each location, someone spoke about the criminal activity and predatory practices of the specific bank or corporation. Some occupiers chalked messages on the sidewalk in front of the buildings. Here is some audio from the tour at 1%.
In front of us is JPMorgan Chase, and in addition to them being one of the biggest bailed out banks, they also, in 2011, admitted that they wrongly overcharged thousands of military families for their mortgages, including active duty personnel in Afghanistan. Bank also admitted properly and improperly foreclosed on more than a dozen military families. Both actions were in clear violation of the Service Members Civil Relief Act, which automatically lowers mortgage rates to 6% and bars foreclosure proceedings of active duty personnel. JP Morgan Chase, everybody.
So now that people's homes are getting foreclosed on and they won't adapt their loans so that they can get a better price and actually stay in their house, now they're contemplating bulk sales of all the foreclosed homes, like the big banks and stuff, so that they can lend, so that they can become renters, so they can become, you know, tenant, landlord, overlords over big populations of people. So what they're doing is now is they won't give you a deal to stay in your house, but if you lose your house, they're going to sell it at half price to the bank, so the banks can buy 500 at a time, and then we can all rent from the bank. It'd be awesome.
In front of us is the Wells Fargo Plaza.
Dude. I recently had to settle with the federal government for an institutional policy of manipulating people who were non-white, who could afford normal loans, to liar's loans, i.e. the APR adjustable rate loans. They did this both because it earned them greater fees, but they also, in some of their own emails, referred to them as darkie loans,
right,
showing the clear racism involved here. This was not, Wells Fargo sadly is not alone in this policy. They're only the latest bank to have to make a settlement based on racially targeting non-white families and first-time homeowners for loans they could not afford. One of the cruelest lies you'll hear is that the housing bubble was caused by working families taking homes out they couldn't afford, when all of the evidence proves that the people who were in charge of writing the loans were purposely placing them in ones they could not afford for their own financial gain. And that Wells Fargo, like all of the big banks, has not participated in any of the loan modification programs, as insufficient as they were. They have not even lived up to the initial claims of the Obama administration. And this allows Wells Fargo to steal your money in fees on the house for a rate that you could have gotten a better one on, to then take your home away in foreclosure and sell it out from under you. There has also been a very noticeable spike in suicides across the United States based purely on people losing their homes. The Cook County Sheriff's Department, which is where Chicago, Illinois, they stopped sending sheriff's deputies in on foreclosure claims when the banks could not demonstrate proof of purchase to them, as a way to keep their cops from having to deal with so many suicides because of the mental health costs that was putting on the department.
Where are we at?
We are at Texas and Milan. This is TransCanada's corporate headquarters.
Thank you.
Yeah, Yeah, why don't you go arrest some cops for murder? Because there's plenty of that going around in this city.
Get real with some criminals, dude. Murderers.
Yeah, murderers, not shock and fires.
Don't mess with people who are talking peaceful, dude. It's not cool.
This is public.
It's not fun.
It's chop. Let's keep it in perspective.
On the tour, participants wrote messages in chalk on the sidewalk in front of the stops of the tour. The messages highlighted facts about the businesses they were in front of. There was minimum police interference. However, there was one instance in which there was a dispute over who owned the sidewalk, Bank of America or the people.
Will you describe what's going on here?
They came out and they were telling, Bank of America came out and was telling us that this sidewalk area over here was part of their property and we were not allowed to do that. This cop over here, who hasn't been nothing but just harassing us as we've been protesting, came back and said if they say otherwise that they own this property, then they own this property. Now, when we were on the other side and he started harassing us, it was sidewalk. It was all sidewalk. Now he's changing his story. So this officer up here came up and said, you know, with us being back over here, that it was okay. And they're now just standing there, I guess, talking amongst themselves. So, in other words, they keep changing what is a sidewalk and what isn't a sidewalk. So,
can you tell me what's the idea behind the chalking?
We're doing the 1% tour, and we're giving fast facts on how 1% have crippled the economy, bought our leader, so on and so forth. So we've just got a bunch of chalking that indicates more of the facts in writing so everybody can see it on the ground.
What kind of messages are being written?
Like for myself, I am indicating how a lot of these people have not paid taxes and they've taken bailouts by the billions, and they have been giving millions of dollars to executives of different banks. And this is our tax dollars that is being used for their life of luxury.
Kids are seeing talking to.
Yes, my kids are gaining an understanding after being part of Occupy for the last year. So they're starting to understand the corporate greed issue, and they're down there on the ground just basically telling them they're stupid in their own little way.
After the tour, participants assembled outside of City Hall, where Indy Media had the chance of speaking with members of Occupy Houston.
Can you describe what's going on for me?
Well, okay, so we're in front of City Hall right now, and if you look around, it's kind of more like a moon shape, so to speak. You've got just a crowd of people that are just around the City Hall area, and then we're expecting a lot more people because a lot of people are working. Like I said, we literally are having people that are just walking up here right now. More are going to come after they get off of work, and like I said, with Knicks band playing tonight, we're expecting an even bigger crowd. And of course, as we're keeping it hush-hush with HPD and CID, there is going to be a reoccupation out here. So we're looking forward to that as well.
For those who don't know, can you give me an idea about like the depth and what we are fighting?
You know, I think at the start, a lot of us were ready just to go and attack the corrupted leaders and, you know, trying to do it from a national standpoint. But I think we quickly learned that we could be so much more used in the local area with the mayor and the feeding ordinance, the independent review board. Trying to implement. We have stopped foreclosures. We have the huge bank divestment, things like that. And if anything, it's just more to get the public aware of what is really waking people up to what is going on in our country, because so many people depend on that mainstream media, and we know that, you know, it's very, very biased.
People always talk about, like, oh, what is Occupy doing? What is Occupy done?
Yeah, we're not a bunch of, like, lazy, hippie, no shower taking, no job having people. You know, in fact, on our Facebook page, somebody made the comment that we need to take it. Now, how stupid is that? It's Saturday today, you know, and it's like that common thinking is still existent after a year, you know, and it's people like that that only give us more passion to get out there and keep doing what we need to do, because they're clearly still asleep, you know. So, yeah, but I mean, I think that we've done a great job in the last year.
All you people are beautiful.
Can you give me some accomplishments of Occupy Houston specifically?
Okay, specifically, we had the big bank divestment that we participated in. We linked up with other cities around the nation. Was Texas alone? I want to say that the big banks like Chase, Wells Fargo, lost $11 billion? I think it was $11 billion. But that was in the course of 1 month. They lost $11 billion, and this got transferred to community banks or to credit unions. So that was a big thing and a big plus for Occupy Houston. Then we had the court action, where we, now we have those seven that have gotten the felony charges and stuff. But after displaying the corruption with the CEO of the Port of Houston, he ended up stepping down the very next day. So that was a big win for Occupy Houston as well. From what I understand, we've also stopped foreclosure on certain homes. And the tar sands, you know. We're trying to accomplish that and stop the tar sands issue, you know, the Keystone Pipeline from being, you know, placed in Texas and stuff. So we've got Ben, who unfortunately took in, you know, some police brutality over the course of 5 hours and stuff. But, you know, he's still here, continues to stand, will continue moving forward.
There was one instance in which an employee of City Hall claimed that Occupy Houston members were defacing property. However, the situation diffused quickly and no arrests were made. In fact, occupiers are joking with City Hall employees about the ease with which the chalk could be removed.
We've had chalking going on since early this morning. And as you can see out here, the beautiful artwork that's been done and words that are being said that need to be said, they are now coming up to us and saying that we are no longer allowed to chalk, that we are defacing public property, even though this is washed, it will wash off. I mean, if you see me take my foot and I can rub against here, see how easy the end of that tee is coming off?
They have such a problem with it. Well, let's just get some buckets out here later.
Just throw water on the ground.
Come on.
It's a rain. We got a cold front coming in. It's going to rain and it will wash off.
And Won't Back Down opened up in theaters a few weeks back, being brought to you by the same people responsible for the 2010 documentary Waiting for Superman. Both films decry the current shortcomings in public education and allege that part of the problem lies with the strength of teachers' unions. Here to talk about the film and what he perceives as what is really wrong with public education and how to fix it, we are joined on the phone tonight by Hani Khalil, member of Community Voices for Public Education. Hani, are you there?
I am. Good to be with you.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking time tonight. Can you, just for those of us that haven't spent our $8 or are contemplating spending money on the film, talk a little bit about the movie Won't Back Down and what is the premise of the film?
Sure. Well, Won't Back Down is the story of a white working class single mother who, frustrated with a school who fails to meet the needs of her dyslexic child, joins up with a veteran black teacher to enact a parent trigger takeover of the school. That is, a majority of parents and teachers signed petitions to oust the school's management and reconstitute it as a non-unionized charter type school. The teachers union opposes the effort every step of the way, and it's nearly blocked by a do-nothing public school board. Eventually, the school board does vote to authorize the charter school, and the film ends with the parent's daughter displaying her newfound reading skills before an audience of parents. It's a very nice story, moving in certain ways, but it really promotes myths about the causes and solutions to urban school problems. It says that urban public schools are broken, that teachers' unions are self-interested obstacles to improving schools, and the failing schools should be privatized or converted into non-union charter schools. And I think that every one of those claims are wrong.
And while this film is fictitious, of course, can you educate listeners on these very real parent trigger laws that are so central to the plot of this movie?
Well, parent trigger legislation gives parents the ability to take over schools that are labeled as failing, usually by student scores on standardized tests, what are called high-stakes tests. These laws have been introduced in several states around the U.S., and they're written, proposed, and lobbied for largely by ALEC. ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. That is the organization that's composed of very right-wing legislators at the state and federal level, millionaire corporations, and foundations like the Gates Foundation and the Koch brothers. Now, these are folks who backed the Wisconsin, the attempt of Wisconsin to bust the teachers union and public sector unions with Scott Walker. They backed the permissive gun laws in states like Florida that led to the shooting not too long ago that has really troubled the country. And they promoted voter ID laws that are designed to erect barriers to voting among low-income people and people of color that usually vote Democratic. These are the people that are pushing forward these laws. And if we listen to Diane Ravitch, former top-level person in the Federal Education Department, who is a former supporter of charter schools, she says that parent trigger laws are a clever way to trick parents into seizing control of their schools and handing them over to private corporations. And it's no surprise that many of the people that are part of the American Legislative Exchange Council organizations are for-profit education firms like Connections Academy, which are out there waiting to get contracts to promote their technology, their testing, et cetera, and as a result of these parent trigger laws, hoping that they can get a cut of the action. These parent trigger laws are a new but a growing and important component of the wave of corporate education reform that has included pushing data and accountability and high-stakes standardized testing, charter schools, privatizing schools, all that. They're just a newer piece of it. They have not really been tried in many places. As far as we can tell, they've really been pushed in two different cities around the country, and the parents that actually initially pushed them in California in one location have even pulled back from it. So that's what the parent trigger laws are all about.
And while I think everyone can agree public schools can be better, the debate tends to center around how. What is your answer or CVPE's answer to this? And was there anything redeemable in the movie Won't Back Down that supports your views or the views of Community Voices for Public Education with regard to how to better our public education system in the absence of moving to a more corporate charter or private school model?
Sure. Well, Community Voices for Public Education agrees with the film's premise that public schools are not doing what they need to do. They're not serving all of our kids equally in this country. What we disagree with in this film is the diagnosis of why our public schools are not as effective as they need to be and what the solutions are. So the main thrust of this film is that teachers' unions are the primary obstacle to improving our schools. They're portrayed as concerned only with protecting teachers' jobs, particularly bad teachers' jobs. They don't care about children's education. They're an obstacle. And the movie actually goes to unbelievably absurd extremes. It even has portrays a pro-union teacher as refusing to permit the daughter of the heroine of the film to use the restroom in order to teach her how to respect rules and leads her to wet herself. There's even a segment where repeatedly teachers' unions are said to prevent teachers from tutoring students after school hours. It's just, as a teacher myself, it's ridiculous, and I think my students can tell you that it's just not true. Look, teachers' unions are not perfect. I think they need to be transformed into a more activist social justice direction. They need to work closely with parents. That's exactly what we're trying to do with Community Voices for Public Education. But I'm a proud union member, and I know the teachers' unions, regardless of those flaws, are committed to progress, committed to student achievement. They're also pretty much all that stands in the way of our public education system being privatized and being sold to the highest bidder. Major reason they're being attacked. They're also a key component of the Democratic Party coalition. You kill off teachers' unions, and you permanently wound the Democratic Party, which is another reason they're being attacked. We think there are real solutions to the challenges facing public schools, and that means, first of all, attacking poverty outside schools, as well as increasing resources to address the many needs that low-income students have in our schools. We need to reduce the over-reliance and misuse of testing, which is doing more and more damage to our schools and making it very difficult for our young people to be interested in schooling. We think we need to provide better professional development and training to teachers. And we think we need to have parents and teachers have stronger voices in public schools. That is one of the insights of the film that is right. It's that there are good teachers working at struggling schools, and they often have great ideas for how to strengthen a school, but they need a voice. And we think the way to do that is for teachers and parents to work together and to together advocate for school reform, and that's one of the things we're trying to do with Community Voices for Public Education.
And so you've mentioned that the parent trigger laws, that is one of the latest trends sweeping the country. Actually, parents are not part of the grassroots efforts to get these laws on the books or to even get them before legislators. But parents are part of what you feel is the solution to failing public schools. Can you talk about how parents can plug in or how parents can get involved in their schools beyond just the PTO or a bake sale?
Sure. Well, teachers know that one of the challenges we face is motivating our kids and making sure that kids are working to complete homework on time and so on. And parents have always played a central role in having the kids stay focused on schools. And so we've always known, teachers and parents, we've always known that when we work together, we can get young people to focus on what they need to do. And that's one reason, of course, that parents have often gotten involved in parent-teacher organizations. One of the challenges we face at many of our high-poverty urban schools, though, is that parents are not as involved, not because they don't care, but often because they're dealing with all kinds of problems at home. If they're low-income, they're often working two jobs, unable to focus on school. Unemployed, maybe they're looking for work. And dealing with all kinds of other problems that come with poverty. So often those organizations are not as strong. I think what one of the things that's valuable about this movie is that it shows that parents do care, and that if they see an opportunity for making a difference, for that if they organize, that if they put the time together, that they can actually change things, they will get involved. And that's what we've been seeing here in Houston with Community Voices for Public Education. We have teachers and parents and students that are working together. The difference, I think, between one of the main differences between what we're trying to do and this film is that we don't think the solution is to take a public school out of the public school system and have it focus just then on a small community's needs, which is what the solution is that's put forward under these parent trigger laws. We think we need to advocate on behalf of all students in the country, particularly those coming from situations of poverty and discrimination. And so what we want to see people, parents and teachers and students do together is advocate for policy changes that we think will strengthen schools, particularly to strengthen, as I said before, professional development. We need to strengthen a commitment to attacking poverty. The movie basically says, don't worry about poverty, ignore it. There's even a line, if good schools transform neighborhoods into bad neighborhoods into good neighborhoods. Well, the truth is actually that that's not true. And if we're going to have good neighborhoods, people need to have access to good jobs. Just having good schools doesn't transform neighborhoods enough. So we want to advocate for those kinds of changes. Instead of allowing society to become more unequal, which is what has happened over the last 30 years, we think we need a new commitment to attacking inequality in our country, and especially attacking poverty in the inner city.
Okay, and as we close out, there's about 30 seconds left. Go ahead and give listeners more information about Community Voices for Public Education and how they can learn more about your group and your activities.
Sure. Again, we're a group that's made up of parents, teachers, students, community members. Our website is Community Voices for Public Education, or HoustonCVPE.org. We are advocating now. We're asking the school board here in HISD to reduce the amount of time that's being devoted to high-stakes testing in our schools. We're asking them to make a commitment to push the state to reduce the use of student test scores and student grades, a new development since last year. These are all things we're working for. And we're actually out right now at the Sundance Theater downtown, where there's a new movie being showed about called Revisionaries, dealing with the State Board of Education's takeover by the religious right and their efforts to move our curriculum or align our curriculum and textbooks alongside the vision of the religious rights version of or the critique of it, evolution and American history.
So
folks are going to go through that too.
Okay, thanks, Hanny. Appreciate it. That's all the time we have. You take care. And that does it for tonight's show. Thanks, everybody in the Houston Indie Media Collective, for contributing to tonight's program. Special shout out to our board op for the Media Revolution, Courtney. I'm Rachel, signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace, and be sure to go to kpft.org and click on that tip jar.